Our special moderator today, it's Richard Whitaker, the founder and editor behind conversations.org and very much at the heart of the service space family. And he's also been a former guest in the past as well. So Richard, if you could take it away and perhaps give us a beautiful introduction to Michael, and then we'll go from there.
Thank you, Amit. Michael Stillwater is a multi-talented artist and educator using music for healing and reconnection. Recording artist of many albums, his songs reflect universal spiritual principles, and his chants are known worldwide for opening heart and mind. His intuitive recording artistry provides a way for people to feel supported at an essential level. He also offers a way for anyone to cultivate their own intuitive vocal expression. He's the founder of Inner Harmony, offering musical services online and on-site, and Song Without Borders, producing films and other programs applying song to personal and societal transformation. And most recently, Song Without Borders produced a wonderful feature-length film, Shining Night, which is about the American composer Morton Lauridsen. This introduction could be longer, but I think I'll leave it at that. And thank you so much, Michael, for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Richard.
I'm interested to know something about some of your early experiences that have led you to where you are today. I know one of them, I did some research on your own website, and you mentioned that one of the early influences was the Unitarian Church.
That's right. Well, I would like to share a moment in my high school years, and it's the moment that I'd been getting into guitar and writing songs, and these songs had to do with spirit. And in fact, there was this one chant about reincarnation, and here I was, I think I was 16 at the time. And I remember bringing my guitar to school and sitting in the hall of the high school in Washington, D.C., Woodrow Wilson High School, and just sat down and began singing this chant about how we're just moving through this life, and it's, you know, we keep moving through it and keep going. And people, the other kids came out of the class and were sitting in the hall and were chanting along with me. And that's when the principal came in and sent everyone back to their class and took me into his office and said, you know, you can't do things like this. It disrupts the order of society. And I said to him, basically, I said, well, I understand your point of view, but from my point of view, some disruption of this kind is necessary. And this is what my life is about. And I need to follow this song. And he said, well, what do you mean? And I said, I'm leaving. I can't be in this environment. And he said, but you mean you're going to drop out of high school? And I said, well, I know it looks bad, but this is what I need to do. So I went home that day, and my father, who was working at Capitol Hill in Washington, you know, very much in the establishment, he comes home and he says, well, Michael, how was your day at school? And I said, well, Dad, to tell you the truth, I left. I dropped out today. And he said, well, if what are you going to do? And I said, well, guitar, that's all I want to do. He says, well, you're going to have to practice every day, you know, several hours a day, and we're going to find you the best guitar teacher in town. So that was a very high moment between my father and I. And within a year, I discovered a high school in California called Pacific High, which was very experimental. It's where Buckminster Fuller was had his geodesic domes being proofed, lived in. The students were building the domes and living in them. And it's right above the hills above Saratoga. So it's actually a lot of you live in that area, I think. And they had me come there, and I was able to pay part of my tuition by teaching guitar to the students and the staff. And it was a wonderful experience of continuing education, not by what's laid on me from the world, but from kind of an inner directedness of trusting that if I keep following the song inside of me, as I put it, that it will lead me to where I need to be.
Wow, that's an amazing story. How did you get into guitar as a kid?
Well, it was actually, I was played clarinet all the time in my elementary school days, and played in the band, played clarinet. But the thing about clarinet, it's hard to sing and play clarinet at the same time. You know, it's your mouth is around this reed, and this it just doesn't work very well. You could hum maybe, but you can't sing. And so the guitar, I discovered, was this amazing instrument that had my hands involved with the music making, and it left my voice open to sing. And this was 1963, 64 when I picked it up. And it was a time, I feel, some of the best songs that have been created in the last many years were coming, you know, over the radio. We were hearing so much amazing music. And so I wanted to, emulate that, and played my guitar and started singing the songs of the time. And so that's how it all began.
Was your family musical?
Well, yes. In fact, it was my mother's guitar that I was playing. And since I'm left-handed, the first day I played it, I realized I was a little awkward. So I realized left-handed means I need to turn the strings around. So I took them all off and put them on backwards. And suddenly it felt really good for me. But for her, it was the end of her guitar career. She said, you know, she made a joke about that once. She said, well, beginning of his career, but the end of mine.
It sounds like both your parents were very supportive.
Yeah, they were. They
I
were.
Mean, that's amazing about your father. It sounds like you dropped out of high school to become a musician. Okay, well, you're just going to have to work hard at it.
That's right.
that's very cool. But I'm also struck by how you described that story of going to taking your guitar to high school and sitting in the hall and playing it. So you felt kind of free, it sounds like, to manifest yourself there among the other kids.
Well, you know, I think I, like many other people who feel an inner calling, sometimes it feels in some way out of step or out of harmony with those around you. And you find maybe a few souls who you feel very connected to, but not necessarily feeling connected with the mass, with everyone. At least this was my experience then.
Yeah, I noticed that you did mention in your little bio online that you did feel some alienation.
Yeah, I did. And so it the thing about alienation is that on the one hand, it's a negative, but on the other, it does compel someone to find connection where how they can. And for me, it not only it was a, you know, I would find those, as I said, those souls that I felt resonant with, which they are around, but also with the inner world, with the music inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
I found that this was where I felt so at home in the creating of song. And then it, right at that same time, it was a call to this yoga, and begin studying yoga, and then ultimately moving into an ashram. In fact, this was at the specific high school out in California that in the senior semester of your year there, they ask all the students to leave the school and find someone to apprentice with.
Wow.
In the direction that they want to go.
Wow.
And, you know, I thought I was, my mind said, well, find a great guitarist. But what happened was I was walking in Santa Cruz because the school was just near Santa Cruz, and I stepped into the Integral Yoga Institute, the ashram of Swami Satchidananda. And it was this beautiful mansion down on Ocean Drive or some, I don't remember the exact address, but the rooms were empty of furniture, just this beautiful room smelling like incense. and you know, there for doing the yoga practice and so forth. And I heard a guitar in the distance, and I went up the stairs, and there was someone sitting there playing guitar left-handed. Now, if you have to appreciate that, there's not many left-handed guitarists. So I took this as a sign, and then I said, how does one live here? They said, you just move in. And so I contacted my school. They said, fine, you can finish your school year in the ashram and study Sanskrit and chanting and yoga and meditation. So that is where I spent my final months of high school at the ashram in Santa Cruz.
That's an incredible story. And also, I'm still going back to some of the stuff I read, that maybe you were prepared a little bit also by Mrs. Zants next door. I mean, it sounds like she was an entree into a lot of interesting thought, like you mentioned the Rosicrucians and ancient Egypt and Manly Palmer Hall.
Zants.
That was an important thing in your life?
Yeah. I mean, it was... Here, just imagine this. There you are growing up, and you've lived all your life in this one place, and right across the street is this old house and this old woman, and her daughter had died, her adult daughter, and so she was all by herself, and she'd work in the garden, but she had all this metaphysical books everywhere, and she was like a deep student of theosophy and Manly Palmer Hall and, you know, all these, and Edgar Cayce and all this stuff. I'd never, you know, here,
yeah.
I was, I think I was 9 years old when I went over, and she said, I want to show you some things. And there I was, just being introduced to kind of the world of the ancient masters through Mrs. Zenz.
That's amazing. I can actually relate to that myself. My father was kind of a fan of those folks. But I wanted to just ask one little thing here, which is, you said you took the name Stillwater, which wasn't your given name, to sort of separate yourself somehow from the intellectual domain of your father. Can you say anything about what that what was about?
Well, I think that I'd forgotten I'd written that on the internet. Yeah, I mean, there was really something to that, that I felt that something in me was, as much as I was, of course, connected to my family, there was something in me that was, had a different resonance, had a different tonality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I became, especially there, it happened at the ashram, when I was at the ashram there for that 3 months. And very into the chant, the Sanskrit chant, the power of the syllables of the chant,
mm-hmm.
and the power of word. And it was around that time, I'll tell another little story, which is I was playing in a rock band. I did that too. And there in that area, in Saratoga. And I remember, you know, singing Neil Young's song. Neil Young lives right in that area too.
Right.
And I just loved his music, and I'd sing his songs, and I was singing Down by the River, I Shot My Baby. And I remember, it was like probably the thousandth time I'd sung that song. I just loved that song. But suddenly it was like this light bulb went off as I was singing Down by the River, I Shot My Baby, I Shot Her Dead. And, you know, here I was, you know, I'd wake up in the early in the mornings and be meditating and doing my chanting. And there I was playing in the rock band. And suddenly there was a disconnect between the lyrics and the story in my heart.
Yeah.
And I realized that it didn't invalidate or in any way, you know, it's like the song is still great, but it was like Neil Young's song. And here I realized there was a song, there was a story for me to live and to share. And it wasn't necessarily going to be, you know, the same as the songs that I'd been singing. And that there were new songs that needed to be written and sung. And so I share that. You asked the story about my name and my father,
yeah,
but
that's
connected because it's this recognition of resonance. And there, so I made the choice to actually, I began signing my name Stillwater with my artwork. I was doing artwork at the time too. And then it just gradually felt more and more right that Stillwater was a quieting quality that I wanted for my mind. And so it was like embracing, in a sense, a sound, a mantra, if you will, or a phrase that would be good for me.
Yeah.
So that's I've kept now some, what, 40 years.
That's wonderful. Now, it's interesting. I happened to listen to that Neil Young song not too long ago, and those lyrics bothered me too. And it's a beautiful song, but the lyric, that's a wonderful how you talked about the disconnect and recognizing in yourself that's not that you wanted the words to resonate for something that was true for you on this deeper level. And I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about, in general, the kind of your trajectory. You've described a lot from the beginning, early times in your life, and the sort of connections with music. But I wonder if you could talk about how that all developed and you began to see and recognize more about the healing functions possible with music.
Well, I'll try to kind of shorten this trajectory part over the next several years, and actually bring it to present. But out of the yoga experience, which is very deep for me, in fact, it was so deep I felt at times like that would be my life, that I would, live in an ashram. I wanted to move to a cave in India, and all, I was just so pulled by that. And I remember once it was in the midst of that time that I heard over the radio George Harrison singing "My Sweet Lord,"
Oh.
and it was not, it was just, when that song came in, it was like it hits so strong for those who have ears to hear that. And I realized here's a song that's speaking and has Hare Krishna and Alleluia, and it's a top hit song. And I realized I didn't need to go away to a cave to live my destiny. I needed to let my songs reflect my spirit, bring them into the world. And it was soon after that, a few years after that, that I came across the teaching of A Course in Miracles. And I came across, I was living in Marin County, and it turns out that's where it was published. It was all kind of began there. And it was the year it had been published, and I was with my wife at the time, Maloa, and the two of us came across this teaching of Course in Miracles. And when I looked at the words, I saw it as a big book of lyrics needing to be set to music, and lyrics of simple messages and teachings that, in the simplest form of it, would be lessons and would be catalysts for the heart to open. And I met with Jerry Jampolsky and Bill Thetford, who was one of the scribes of A Course in Miracles up in the Bay Area. And we began traveling together to different study groups where the course was being studied and talked about. And then I would sing it. I would bring out my guitar and be singing that message of that. And it felt like very good, very right. But ultimately, after some time, I realized, I don't want to talk about it so much. I just want to be in the experience of it. So in 1978 began a regular musical gathering. First, it was called the Miracle Singing Experience. And it was a combination of Course in Miracles with other traditions and Sufi traditions and bhajans, and just bringing that all into easily repeated chants that everyone can join in. So community singing, because it was right at that time I stepped out of needing to write songs with many lyrics, or at least finding that I would still do that, but much less. I loved the power of everyone singing together. The beauty of it, the power of it, the sense of being connected with the community. I didn't need to be there singing my message to everyone. I wanted to be there in the circle and like set something going and then just relax and be in it with everyone.
That's beautiful.
And that
Go ahead.
began what became called Heaven Song. We incorporated as a church, and then for nearly 10 years, we moved to Hawaii. It was in Maui. We had weekly gatherings, and all with the Course in Miracle messages and these and Sufi messages woven in, and all universal, a universal spirituality and song. I'll just close that chapter in that 1989, 1990, it felt like that form had played itself out in me. I was like the structure of it. And I felt it was also the marriage with Maloa. It was something was complete. And so I moved back to the mainland, to California, and then to Washington State, and entered a time that wasn't so much involved in community gatherings. It was more inward. And you talk about healing. You asked about the healing use of music.
Right.
And this is where I began the using spontaneous song with people as they were dying and their families.
Can I just I just want for some clarification. You said that a form had played itself out, and would you say again what that form was that had played itself out around 89?
For me, it was the church form of called Heaven Song.
Okay. Well, one thing I noticed in all along in talking with you, which is so kind of impressive to me anyway, is how it sounds like there was for you early on in your life some sort of deep intuitive sense, which you've had the capacity to follow. I mean, you talked about in high school you dropped out, but it sounds like there was some sort of deep knowing inside of you, which you followed along.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was going to ask also, and it, I gathered that you did a lot of performing, singing in front of people, and then you described how that you began to, it sounds to me like you began to become less interested in standing up in front of people as a performer and becoming part of a group experience, and that kind of I'm up here in front of you performing kind of aspect began to shift. And it sounds to me like it's all shifted in that direction of following that deeper inner kind of intuitive calling.
That's right.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, and in fact, I've been sharing over the years called Beyond Performance. And it's for people who are performers in some way or want to be performers or are developing their performance capacities. And to what happens when your performance is for service, and you know the broader dimensions of what that means, and beginning with the service of it's to let go of your needing to be the one that it's all about, and that all about is the experience that you're in with everyone.
Yeah.
And so that's been, as you say, that's been a guiding principle in my life. And the other thing that happens is that which I find beautiful and rewarding and compelling and enriching for me, I very soon I want to share that with others and feel that, well, if I can experience that, others can too. And so this, as I mentioned, this intuitive or spontaneous song work I do, where I just create songs in the moment in response to who I'm with, which began in 1978 and continued since then, and is the work I did in hospice and in healthcare. But at some point, I realized this is something anyone can do, because little children all over the world are singing songs they make up all the time.
Yeah,
it's universal. It's all around the world, and it's also universal that at some point, for most people, it stops. You know, at some point, growing up, that capacity for song making, spontaneous song making, it gets minimal, or at least it's reduced to doing it very much on your own, but not in front of other people. And so I began creating environments where people could return to the songmaker inside of them, not as a training as a songwriter, but as a remembering of our humanity. And it has been wonderful, and it's had so many different dimensions to it. And that's that's what I'm loving to do, and that's a lot of the work in the world that I do now is that, and that's the work with the films as well. The underlying intention of the films, that Song Without Borders and the films, is to somehow convey, in a variety of ways, the memory, like catalyze the memory of the creative pulse inside of us. And particularly for those who believe they don't have it, that they're the one to listen to others create,
yeah,
and watch others create. And so using all the media of film and music and so forth to create a support for people to remember that they have that spark inside of them.
I think that's very important, and it's beautiful. And I was really struck by, I was looking at those short films that you made for Song Without Borders. The little short films you made, I think, down there at the Parliament of World Religion in Melbourne, the short interviews, those are beautiful little films, by the way. But you asked the question with the first little film that you made, which featured a number of different people, including A.T. Arya Rotney and Reverend Barbara King and several other wonderful people. You pose this question, what happens to those qualities in ourselves that don't need to be graded? We live in this culture where we're always being measuring ourselves and being pressured to measure ourselves, but what happens to those qualities that don't need to be graded or measured? And I think that's what you're talking about there, and that seems like an incredibly important question to me.
Well, what I've, thank you. I mean, I'm in agreement on that.
Yeah.
And one of the missing parts I've been feeling for some time for this work or this mission has been programs for children to have a support in their daily life that allows them to not close that down. Because as I said, the little children are singing. So what would happen if the children never stopped?
Yeah.
If they kept as they grew up? And so now we have a pilot program in a Swiss school where the kids are from, you know, many different countries and speak many different languages. Like it's, I think, 11 different cultures in this one classroom. And these are 7-year-olds. And every morning throughout the year, they're going to be given a little supportive exercise to be making up songs with each other. So it's never to be on the spot of like you're going to stand in front of the class. It's more of just with each other, opportunities for making up songs and listening to each other. So empathically, the practice of listening and respecting each other and expressing their joy. And so that's happening in Switzerland. And then I was asked, I just met these educators while I was in Assisi, Italy, at the Ananda Ashram there. And they're from Hampton, Virginia Beach area, and they're in an organization that has 5,000 children after school program, ages I think it's 6 to 18, and they loved this idea, and so they're having me do a training with their trainers to implement song sourcing, is what I call it, song sourcing with their kids. So and they start getting some interesting what do you call it, evidence or some research practice in this, the power of giving kids an opportunity to continue spontaneous song making as an integrating approach.
Wow, that's beautiful. How did you, shifting gears just a bit, excuse me, how did you find your way into hospice? And working in hospice with music and song?
Well, there was one aspect of that was my own father when he was dying. And that was a very strong message that I needed to put my attention there at the end of life, or so-called end of life. And I remember that the doctor... The family doctor who called us to him and said, "You know, your father's his organs are failing, and so he doesn't have much time." And I remember asking him if he had told my father about this, if he told him what he thought, that he was going to be dying soon. And he began to cry, the physician, and said, "I've never been able to tell that to any patient because it brings up my own fear of my own mortality." And at that moment, something happened inside of me, which is to realize that the people who I had held in such high regard as being kind of the priests of the temple of life and death, being the doctors. Here was an example of a very, very prominent physician who was very, very vulnerable in sharing this with me and with my family. And I realized that this cannot be an isolated instance, that this is probably widespread, and that it's of utmost importance to our well-being as a society for the awareness and the ease of our passages to be supported. And this is what ultimately led to the recording called Graceful Passages, which is music with spoken prayers and messages from wonderful spiritual teachers across the planet, directed to someone who is in their dying time. And it's now the leading resource, audio resource in America, in hospice for reducing anxiety around the fear of dying.
Wow.
So that came out of this time in hospice, which followed that experience with my father, where I realized I wanted to spend time with the people who were dying, that I needed to get, for myself, I needed to get down to the roots of any fear I might have about death, but also down underneath it where it meets the mystical truth that I know so deeply must be, that there is that which does not die with the passage of the physical body. And to meet people, regardless of what their beliefs are, but when they're o in that open state as they're approaching the threshold, to meet them in the music, which has no boundaries. And that's what I discovered. And I also found that there were times when there would be no music to play. It's just be silent with someone for a long time. And maybe I'd leave the room without ever playing anything or singing anything. But very often, at least right towards the end, someone, maybe the mother, the father, the wife, the husband, the children, would say, "Would you sing a song?" And instead of singing a song that I knew, I would sing from the unknown. I would sing from the mystery of the moment of feeling the empathic connection between all of us.
Wow.
And these songs would be about the love that was it just so present in the room, but wasn't being spoken.
Wow.
Just
Wow.
giving it some sound. And often people would cry. And if often sometimes in the doorway would be the nurse or the chaplain or the doctor, the social worker. And so over time, I found drawn to be with them and their groups and doing work with their conferences and so forth. Because for a family, they have this experience once with their loved one, you know, or a few times. But for the medical person, the healthcare practitioner, it's constant. It's every day. It's
Yeah.
over and over and over.
Yeah.
And so much, you know, grief and stress that's not expressed or dealt with. So the music has come in to serve that dimension as well.
Wow. I'm looking at the clock here, and I think, according to the schedule I have, maybe I pose one more question, and then that would be opened up for others. Is that right?
Yes, that's right, Richard. Well, and you know, it'll be kind of fluid as well because
Okay.
some folks are shy sometimes, and
Okay.
so we'll have an opportunity to kind of go back and forth. And Michael, I've heard a lot of great things, so I've got a couple of questions for you as well. But go ahead, Richard, and
Well,
move on to
okay.
your next question.
All right, Michael, here's a question for you. You were there at the Parliament of World Religions in Melbourne, and you did those wonderful recordings with several wonderful people. I wonder if you'd share one favorite experience, one favorite experience from that.
Wow, a favorite.
That's probably going to be tough, but.
Well, I'll begin just by the context is that it was only like a month before the conference that I picked up my first video camera and just knew it was time to shift from the guitar in my hands to a movie camera.
Wow.
And that it was time to begin asking the question, what is the great song inside of you? Is there a great song, and what is that? What is the great song for you in your culture, in your religion, in your tradition? And it was, just in that same time period, I learned that the conference was happening in Australia, in Melbourne, the Parliament of Religions Conference, gathering of all the many, many, many leaders of religions, and knew that this would be an ideal place to ask the question.
Yeah.
About this great song. So I made the arrangements, got a press pass. Here for the first time, I'm in the press room with ABC and stuff, and I just picked up the camera. Great, it was fun, and just so many experiences of wanting these interviews and often having to deal with not the perfect environment, like a quiet room, but just in the hallway, just like the master's walking by, and he's just,
Yeah.
hey, go for it. And I so happily and surprised the way I was received by all of them, all of these teachers and spiritual leaders. They just none of them, said no. They were all so kind and willing to say something. And what I discovered was that they all, when I brought up this concept of the great song or this idea, they all smiled and nodded and said, oh yes, we know the great song, it's in our tradition. And so what I realized in all of that was that it was not, it had has been spoken in different words, of course, throughout time, but that it was needing to come up to the front. It was needing to come into consciousness more. This idea of the great song as a both as a metaphor and a reference for that which is connecting all of us and underneath it all, and sometimes expresses not as song as we know it, but in many, many ways. Each person has their own expression of it. And I know we're finishing this period, but I just wanted to close with how this whole thing of filming led to a feature film in the course of just this last 2 years about one person out of all the 100 interviews I did with so many people. One man, Morten Lauritzen, this American composer, was he himself and his music was so compelling that it led to a full documentary, which has now, been winning awards in film festivals and such, and touching people and introducing his music to so many people. And it would be not at all fair or fitting to not mention now, while I'm just mentioning that film, my wife, Doris Lasser-Stillwater, a wonderful psychologist here in Switzerland, who was with me through every part of that and so creatively contributing to it, both in just her mind, her sense about people deep, that she really helped the whole process unfold and did some of the filming itself as well for second camera work. So I just want to honor her and her role in this and those who supported it, the I won't mention the names, but just the people who put in the money and the time and the creativity to help this thing happen.
Yeah, well, and it's it really everyone should go and take a look.
Sorry, Richard, didn't mean to cut you off there. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just that's wonderful what you're talking about. The film about Morten Larsen's wonderful, and those short films are wonderful. You clearly have a gift for filmmaking as well.
While we wait for people to join the queue, I had a quick question for you, as Michael. And this was kind of going back to that high school time frame. And you had talked about, moving into this ashram during your senior year of high school, and then being involved with meditation and chant and yoga. And I'm curious, what was your sort of spiritual upbringing, and how did that sit with you, or how did you sort of tune into that so quickly? And, and then the second part of that is, so much in chanting, at least from a Vedic tradition, is the power of sound vibration. And that vibration has been, thought to also not only provide healing, but it can do a lot of different forces. So I'm curious if that element has also been, was also brought into your music.
Thank you for asking that. One of the early influences for me was my aunt, who had polio from an early age, but she was a disciple of Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, and also worked with the United Nations. And so I had, even though we didn't spend much time together, that perspective of Gandhi and the nonviolence movement, and then the United Nations. Somehow that just lifted my spirits whenever I thought about that, about, a place where everybody is sitting at the table, and, or at least in my awareness then, I realize there's some have been excluded, but most people, it's the idea behind it, that we're all sitting at the table. And that just really inspired me. And the religious training, I really didn't have so much. I mean, we went to Unitarian Church for some time, and a Methodist church for a very little time, and so there wasn't so much of the Christian education that many people have. My parents were more, I would say, agnostic, really, and so. In a sense, the teachings I got was through the songs and the music and the Beatles and the lyrics, and having to kind of discern what the story is in that. And then when I came across Zen and yoga philosophies, the doors just opened up. It was like I'd been waiting for that. And you asked the second question. I'm not remembering now.
Yeah, no, the second question was around the power of sound vibration, as it often is spoken to in relation to chanting or mantra, and curious how that might have influenced some of your song making, especially when you're doing it in a healing environment, or as you said, in a room, sensing that love and being able to take that vibration out.
Well, it's... I feel it happens as we open to it. And, for all the years of practicing the chanting in the traditional chanting environments, my own voice got very resonant in the lower ranges, which when it's a lower voice, then you've got the harmonics that are happening above it too. And so I was, in a sense, basking in the vibrations with my own voice. And, also, I had my own wounding around feeling that I wasn't a good singer, right? So I had that as well, and which turns out many people have, the sense their voice isn't good enough or anything, comparing. And so what I found was that the vibration itself was healing me, was healing this wound in me of feeling I'm not so good, because it felt so good to be chanting with these low sounds and these harmonics. And then I discovered that very sound was being beneficial, or was making other people smile and was making other people happy and was being healing for them on some level. So I think it comes back to that idea that we do that which is healing for us. And if in the process of that healing that happens for us, then we become of service to others.
Beautiful. I'm going to take it to one of our next callers who has another question for you.
Thank you, Amit. Richard and Michael, thank you for gifting this such a beautiful symphony of the conversation. The start of our Saturday, symphony for the Saturday. I would like to share a quick, followed by a question, also a quick reflection. What was happening as we were listening to this conversation right here, I was sitting at the foot of my wife, who is in her third trimester of the pregnancy. And I would like to think what happened just at this moment is probably a symphony, greatest symphony of my heart at this moment. Like, this conversation really drawn me at her feet, and quite spontaneously, naturally, I started giving her a foot massage as she was resting. And it was such a beautiful experience of listening and then connecting to her resting body and give this moment of healing. And that what it is, it was doing in the process to heal myself was such a beautiful, beautiful experience that I wanted to share. And I would like to think of that as the greatest song from my heart at this moment. So now the question part, it's more of a, may I request you or invite you to offer maybe a yogic Sanskrit chant or perhaps an unknown, as you would like to call it, an unknown unfolding from your heart at this moment through some chants. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Amit. It's the response I'd like to. And by the way, thank you for that beautiful image of you there massaging the feet of your pregnant wife. I mean, I just love that. And the symphony, as you say, the Saturday symphony of this. What I would like to do, because you've asked for it, so you stepped into the space of a request for a song. And so what I'd like to, if we have the time for it, and it seems like that this is okay, that I'd like to offer a song from the unknown. And the song will be for you, for your wife, and for your child. And specifically, just into that place where you said exactly the energy of what you spoke about, feeling a healing as you just were there in contact with her, and with your child, and with your heart. So I feel that the theme of this song is about the beautiful connection of love that you share. Mm. Are you open to that?
Please, yeah, we are so deeply blessed. Thank you.
Okay, and
Michael, just so you know that on the call that asked a beautiful question and reflection. That's Prakash and his beautiful wife Shruti, and that's who's expecting.
Say again.
So the caller's name is Prakash, and his wife's name is Shruti.
Name Amit earlier. I don't know why. Well, this is good. So let's go to the right name. So it's Prakash and his wife. Thank you.
No worries.
And also, just to let you know, and everyone who's listening to this, I'll record this song as it's happening here in my studio in Switzerland. And because then it'll have a nice quality to the recording. And this is, it's all in the moment. So I don't know this song. I've never heard it before. And yet it's recorded. And then if you are interested, we'll make it available so you can have the link to that and listen afterwards. Okay, so we'll do it that way. Go. Flowing through my head.
This love that I feel at the heart of everything that's real is holding us now together.
Spontaneous as well. And so thank you very much. I'm sure Prakash and Shruti truly appreciated that.
Remember
as
this moment forever. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. And when your child, you know, is in this world, so at some point you might want to play that song and say, you know, this song happened with you at the heart of it. You were there kind of, you know, bringing it through. Wonderful.
You know, it was interesting as you know, as you were speaking, as we were, you know, just preparing to have this call and you know, just reading on your background, Michael, I was trying to envision, you know, how is it that he does it spontaneously, this love? How does he bring it out? And wow, you really made us all feel it. And so I appreciate that. I'm gonna jump on over to our next caller, who I'm sure has another wonderful question.
Hi, this is Gayatri. Michael, it's been so soothing and calming just listening to you and your song. It was just beautiful. Thank you so much. My namaste to you from me and from all of us. So my request has already been granted. So that's all I wanted to say. No questions. Thank you. Beautiful.
Welcome, Gayatri. Namaste. Well, you know, one of the things that when I do, I love to do a ceremony called the honoring. I call it the honoring. And it can be any group, size group of people. It can be anywhere. It can be on the, like this, you know, online or in person. And the idea is that a person asks for what they want or they speak their intention. Or it could be for healing or empowerment or just, you know, what they're ready for in their life. But then a song is born for them and recorded and for everybody and, you know, and as many songs are recorded. But what I always say is allow the moment to feel that it's already fulfilled. Like breathe in with the music, the sense that whatever you're asking for is already done. And we all, I think everyone I'm talking to, it's a very intelligent group here that's aware that this is the practice for manifestation, for bringing things in, is to feel it, that it's, what does it feel like that it's already happened? And so, Gayatri, when you just said that your wish was granted or what your request was fulfilled, that reminded me of that, how that sense inside of us that there's the fulfillment already here. It really, it's very, very powerful to go that route.
Thank you. Yeah, truly, the sense of, yeah, the fulfillment and the contentment that there's nothing more left, you know. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You know, Michael, I had a quick question before I jump over to our next caller and question was, how do you tap into that authenticity each time? You know, I think, you know, especially for those of us that have that fear of perhaps not even performing, but not thinking that we're good enough, you know, and we might get into a situation where maybe we're sharing and then we're all of a sudden like scrambling and almost feeling like we're losing our balance. And then, you know, rather than sharing so authentically in the moment, maybe we just pull something from our past that we might have shared before, because that's such an easier crutch. And when you're doing something as beautiful as putting together music like that and song and lyric together, how do you stay authentic?
Well, it's a very good question, and it's always the it's always the direction that we are headed is it towards greater authenticity. And I think what you said several very good points there as you spoke. You said that sometimes we lean into the past as a crutch for things that are familiar. I know for myself that, for instance, with the music, there are chord patterns. There are certain musical patterns that just are solid workable patterns that I can relax into. And then when I have the musical structure pattern that's easy, then the melody can be new, the words can be reflective of just whatever in that moment is the feeling. So it's wanting to not plan ahead. I mean, that's the whole practice, is you're not planning for what the words will be. And when I do this practice in groups as a method, as a way of, I call it song sanctuary or song sourcing, just coming back to your center in song, everyone is making up songs at the same time and working with their edge around spontaneous song making. The thing is that you can't do it while you're thinking. You can't make spontaneous song and think about it. You have to let go. And so it's a practice. I think that, back to your question, how do you make it authentic? You let go. You let go into the feeling in the moment and the connection. You could do it on your own, but the connection with someone else and having them looking at you, or even if your eyes are closed, just feeling the presence of someone else right there, and you go into the fire of that moment. You know, and let the song be born out of that fire, like a phoenix, you know, out of the ashes rising. And it's just beautiful. It's all, there's always a song in every moment.
Mm. That's great. I'm going to go ahead and go to our next caller while I marinate on that for a moment.
Hi, Michael. My question is, how do you, from your experience, like, differentiate between something that you hear like deep in your gut that you have to do and that you have to follow versus like a thought? And I just want to ask that question, like, what it's like from your experience, how do you really know the difference?
Good question. I mean, that's one of those perennial questions. And mm-hmm. I think for myself, if because I'm very, you know, mind person, there are lots of thoughts and lots of ideas and lots of possibilities all the time. And so where is the energy? What direction do I go in with all of that? Where do I focus my full attention and move towards in the midst of a sea of ideas and possibilities? And what I find is really helpful is navigating towards or with feeling of freedom, feeling of joy, feeling of love, those qualities that where I know they're solid qualities underneath that which is the best in me and in you and in all of us. And if I let those qualities help guide which place to go, another thing is if something comes back, and it keeps coming back, I take notice. Mm-hmm. A random or a passing idea, interesting concept can come and go. But if I find something continues to come in, and it also then comes over and fits into this sense of resonating with a core, the sense of love, joy, freedom, then I have a good sense that this is a way that I can go. And you know, we can say, you know, life, there's always the risk of finding ourselves on a path that we consider, maybe I don't want to be on this path, but then we can make a change. successful, we change along as we go, if it's for some reason not where we want to be. But it's worked for me very much in my life, and it keeps leading me on to the next unfoldment of my life. And I would imagine it could do the same for you.
Thank you. So can I just reflect back a little bit what I heard?
Yeah.
I heard you say that if something shows up multiple times, then to really pay attention to that. And then also to go with whatever feels most joyful and most aligned, and to really like feel into the choices in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I heard. And I like to reflect back because it helps me to integrate it more into my body.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael, thank you so much for this beautiful call. I had to drop off the call for a few minutes. So I hope this question was, if it was answered, I'll just do the recording later. My question was, for those of us who have a lot of fears about following the song in our hearts, it was so nice to hear your story of how you were able to do that back from your school days. What are some words of advice from your experience?
I didn't quite hear, the voice wasn't quite clear. Do you say what is my experience?
So my question was, what are your, some words, I wanted some words of wisdom from you on, for those of us who have a lot of fears about following, like we know this is our calling and we know this is where we have to go, but there's so much of fear that's stopping us from doing it. What are your words of wisdom to help with that?
Right. What to say about when fears keep us from following the song in our heart. And this is so well known. I think everyone on the planet can relate to this question. So thank you for asking. And
mm-hmm.
I say that the song, it's always there. It doesn't die. It doesn't go away. It's there. And it will call itself to want to come forth. It will ask in many, many ways, and it will call Allah, meaning people, to some incidents and people, books and movies and whatever that come into our consciousness as a reflection of some side of us. That's why, so, we might cry at a movie, or when we hear something, or when we feel that the tears of familiar homecoming and resonance. And it's a sense of that we're hearing our song outside of us. We're hearing a reflection of our song, a mirror of it. And so even when we feel afraid of, bringing our song out, life itself will continue to help us to call it forth until the power of the song itself will help us overcome that fear. Like that old, the saying about, when the flower has to bloom, even if it was afraid of the pain of blossoming, it will bloom. It will happen. So I would say to you not to worry about the fears of your song, but to listen for the compelling inspiration of life that is continually calling forth the song in you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Michael, this has been an absolutely incredible call. Unfortunately, we don't have time for any other questions. But I'll tell you, I'm feeling so moved and resonated, and I'm excited to run out and tell so many people just what an incredible way to start off my day it was to hear this call. I mean, Richard was so masterful with his questions, and your responses were so elegant, and all of our callers are just sharing and asking so many great questions and insights. And so I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you, Richard, and thank you to all the people that are on the call for making this so beautiful. So before we sign off, I wanted to do two things. One, I wanted to just give you an opportunity to share any sort of final closing thoughts, or perhaps if something else arose, to do that, and then we will sign off as we usually do with another minute of silence, but in gratitude. And so I just wanted to turn it to you.
And thank you so much, Michael, but go ahead.
Is it, when you said turn to you, you're turning to the circle, the whole circle, or?
I'm turning to you, Michael.
Okay. Well, how I like to finish is to just, it's in thankfulness to the great song. We call it by many names, but I'll here call it the great song. Encouraging us, for inspiring us, for comforting us, for being inside of us in such a unique way that it's like that thumbprint or that fingerprint that's like no one else's. The way the great song is inside of you and inside of me, it's a unique expression. Wherever we go, that song is with us and is guiding us, and it continues to transform and change. So it's not a static thing. It's not just one thing. It's an ongoing, unfolding, blossoming of life inside of us and through us. And as we share that song with others, we find that we become channels for the great song in this world, coming through us. It could be as simple as a loving touch, you know, or it could be a poem, or it could be just a glance, and it could be a song or a dance, I mean, however it comes through you. But I just want to thank the song and thank each of you. Thank you, Richard, for your wonderful questions and just, you know, in depth looking at my life. It's so fun to share that. And to thank you all, and just it's been a real joy of this time with you.